Penny. I'm Fenella, I'm an addict.
Hi, Fenella.
First of all, I'd like to apologise for my grand entrance. I've been in Brighton today at a funeral for somebody who I knew in my early recovery in London, who didn't get the message of this programme, and she was 46 and sadly, you know, suddenly died a couple of weeks ago. And I kind of raced back here, panicking, thinking I'm not going to get here on time. And I hate being late. You know, one of the things I pride myself on these days is the fact that I'm so reliable and, you know, I do what I say I'm going to do. And, you know, of all the meetings that I'm walking in late to, it happens to be this one, you know, which is just like a complete fucking nightmare. Somehow I've evaded doing a share here. You know, I don't know how I managed that, but I've always been quite grateful that nobody's asked me. And then Shelley rang me this week and, you know, one of the things I learned early on in my recovery was to say yes to service. And that's something that I've really stuck to all the way through. So anyway, going back to my journey, you know, I'm sitting in the car and I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do? And then I've looked at my sat nav and I've seen 3.2 miles. 27 minutes. I'm thinking I can run that faster than I can drive it. So I'm thinking, shall I just pop the car, park the car and run? And I nearly did. I did actually run a bit of the way, and I was going to say that I had run 3 miles, but I think that would have been a fib. But I do a lot of running, actually. That's one of the things I found in my recovery that gives me a real sense of worth and gives me a goal in life. I probably run a bit too much. I don't know, 3 ultra marathons in a month, maybe a little bit too much, but, you know, it's healthy. I don't know. Recovery is amazing, you know, and every day I'm grateful for the gifts that I have, even the days when it's shit, because some days it's really shit, you know, and I think to myself, I can't go on, I can't do this, you know. I believe that addicts, the way that addicts are different from normal people, if there is such a thing as normal people, is that our normal state, or my normal state, is that I'm kind of below normal. So it's almost like my natural state is kind of slightly depressed. And I have to work to bring that up slightly so that I'm normal. And in the past, the way that I did that was to use substances to bring me up to that point where I felt normal. And now the thing that I use to bring me up to that point to feel normal is this program and the people here. It's my higher power. It's everything that this program has to offer, you know. And I often think about, you know, how am I still here and, you know, so many other people aren't. It seems to be quite a difficult thing to do to get long-term clean time, you know. It's like, I think about, you know, I mean, I've been coming to meetings now since 1995. I had 2 years, 3 months clean. I relapsed for a weekend and I will be coming up for 20 years in June. And I was lucky I was one of the young ones, you know, and I look at youngsters who come in now. I was 23 and I look at people who are young now and I think, my God, they're so young. You know, they can't have done all that stuff, but I'd done all that stuff at the age of 23, you know. In fact, I was messed up at 19. I nearly went into treatment at 19 and then I was just about to be put in this psychiatric hospital. And I was like, no, I'll be all right. I can do it on my own. I can do this, you know. And I went and had another 4 years of pain and chaos and more arrests and more dramas and, yeah, more places to go that I didn't want to go to. So I'm really, really grateful. And when I see young people here, I always make a point of talking to them because I think it's really important to say, this is possible at a young age. You are really lucky because you've got your whole life ahead of you, you know, and I will be eternally grateful for that. So, going back to, you know, how am I still here? I don't know. You know, I'm somebody that struggled to do step work. It's taken me a long time. You know, it's taken me years to get through my steps, if I'm honest. But I also believe that we all have different qualities, you know, and I struggled with writing. For me, you know, writing sent me into panic attacks. I don't know what it was. I just found that I didn't have the confidence or the courage to express myself on paper. So I found other elements to this program that I was more suited to, like service, sponsorship. And other things that I could do well. And I think, you know, some people come in and they love writing, you know? Mm-hmm. It wasn't something I could do. You know, I was educated, but I couldn't write. You know, I couldn't do it. The fear was just so immense. And so it has taken me a long time, you know, but I've always been doing my step work. It's not that I haven't, you know, but it's been a slow process for me, you know. But I also have done it really thoroughly. So it's okay. And the reality is I'm still sitting here, you know, somehow after these years. So something must be right somewhere along the line. And I also really believe that there's no point in going around the steps 10 times if you're not actually living this program in your life. It's how we, you know, it's how I go out and I deal with life that is a testament to my recovery. As I say, I don't know why I'm still here. I'm very, very grateful. And my faith has grown as I've gone along, because in the beginning I didn't understand that side of the program either. I didn't really understand how praying was going to keep me clean. But what I've learned, and I think, again, this is something that comes with time, is that I've got a deep sense of belief inside me that everything is going to be okay, no matter what happens, and I can deal with anything. And the reason I have that is because I've been through so much in recovery. You know, life is really challenging. You know, life is full of ups and downs. It's not easy. It's not a bed of roses. You know, I've done mental things in recovery. You know, even at 10 years clean, I was doing stuff that I wouldn't even mention in here now, because I, you know, shocking. But I also believe that, you know, it's a slow process, recovery. You know, we come in here and, you know, we're drug dealers, we're criminals. You know, we can't just suddenly in a day go, oh yes, I'm really perfect, I'm an angel. It doesn't work like that. You know, it's like behaviours that I had that I'd been using for years, they've taken a long time and they've slowly kind of slipped away and it's changed. And the other thing as well that I found is that, you know, up to about 15 years clean, I was really naive to think that I could just come to this fellowship and I didn't need to go anywhere else for any specific help. And I know that might be a bit controversial. This is my home, but I have other issues. You know, at 15, I haven't thought about drinking or using for many, many years. It hasn't even crossed my mind. So what happens is that my illness has manifested itself in lots of lovely other areas that I didn't even know existed, to be honest. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I had a little mad obsession last week, for example, and I was in it thinking, I really can't be contemplating behaving in this way. I can't, you know, but I was, you know, and I was almost going to act out on it, you know, thinking, I can't do this. But fortunately, I picked the phone up and I really, you know, I rang people and I kind of shared what was going on, and it kind of subsided and I was able to step back and not act out on that behaviour. But the truth is that, you know, my head is still crazy. It's never going to get well. You know, I'm insane. I embrace my insanity. I love myself for my insanity today. You know, actually, I don't want to be normal. I like the fact that I'm a little bit mental. You know, I was mental in my using and I've got a different kind of mental going on today, but I'm okay with that. But I need you guys. You know, I can't do this thing on my own. I really can't do this thing on my own. You know, when I pick the phone up to somebody, it's almost like I'm having a little mini meeting, you know? And it's when I keep the thoughts in my head that they get twisted and they get insane. But as soon as I vocalise them, you know, I'm able to make sense of what's going on up here. Kind of going back to, you know, my first addiction was food. You know, I wouldn't have started using drugs if it wasn't for food. I was 17 and a half stone at the age of 16. And at that point, I wanted to die. You know, I didn't want to live. I couldn't control it. I absolutely couldn't control it. I was the one that everybody laughed at. You know, I was the joker. And I was dying inside. You know, I was dying inside. And I can recognise from the age of 5 or 6, being at, like, children's birthday parties and there being all this food out, and I would just stand by the table and I would just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. There was not an off switch. And I think to how my children are today, you know, when they were small kids and they were, I'd have, you know, like, a birthday party and I'd buy all this food and they never touched it. And I was thinking, my God, it must have been really apparent as a child for me then that I was this kid that was attacking this food, And the reason I started using drugs was because I was told I would lose weight. And I was at that point of, I don't want to live, but this is a possible solution to the problem that I have. So I thought, well, I might as well die anyway. You know, I don't want to live like this anyway, so I might as well take drugs. So I started using drugs. And for a while, they were great. You know, I loved it. You know, I was involved in the party scene, ease, all that stuff. And it was fun, but I was very naive because I came from quite a privileged background in some ways, not emotionally, but financially. Actually, emotionally, it was horrific. It was very abusive. But, people would, if you kind of looked at what was going on from the outside, you'd probably think that I was really fortunate. So I was really anti-drugs. I was anti even smoking cigarettes. I was quite a goody two-shoes in some ways, but anyway. So drugs just took over, and very quickly I was arrested for dealing at 17. And it was just a spiral from that point, really. And every time I got arrested, it was worse, And then towards the end, it was, I was looking at prison. And I just completely went mental. And I remember just ringing up a psychiatric hospital. My dad had medical insurance, and I said, come and pick me up. And they came and picked me up. And that was my recovery journey. That's really where it started. And I did 3 months in this place. And then I was very fortunate that somebody knew I needed to be in a 12-step program, and they got me into a rehab. And and I never really wanted to get, I didn't think I needed to get clean. Yeah, I took 500 E's into the psychiatric hospital with me. Do you know what I mean? So like the paranoia, you can imagine. I was like sitting in my room, knowing I had these drugs. They didn't search me, and I just fucking lost. Excuse my language. I just completely lost the plot. Do you know what I mean? And I had to get someone to come pick them up. I didn't take them, obviously. Maybe that would have been a good idea, actually. So I was a bit mental. Anyway, I was really lucky. That was the beginning of my recovery journey. But as I said, I didn't think that I was going to, I never would have envisaged that I would be sitting here today and doing what I'm doing now, And it has been an incredible journey. And yeah, it's so hard to know what to talk about, really. There's so much. I remember when I used to first do shares, it was like, I'd be like, oh, what do I say? And it's like, you kind of get to 10 minutes and then it's like blank. And, I used to kind of just seize up and I couldn't say anything else. I'd be like, okay, that's it, I'm done now. And actually now I could share for ages and ages and ages, and I actually get quite frustrated in meetings now, because in the old days nothing was timed. You get 4 minutes now to share. It's just not enough, is it? I kind of feel sometimes it's like, we're all cut short, we might not have finished what we wanted to say. So it's quite nice to get the opportunity to do a long share. You don't really get that very often. I guess what I think, the thing that, if I kind of relate to my life today, I've had, the last couple of weeks have been very emotional in many ways. I've had some really difficult things to deal with, and I've had some incredible gifts that have just been given to me. When it's really hard, I can think, I can't deal with these feelings, they're overwhelming, it's too much. But the feelings, they just don't last. But when I'm in it, I think it's going to be forever. It's almost like whatever feeling I've got, it's as if that's forever. And it's not, It's amazing how, 10 minutes later, if I've done something positive, all of a sudden I can think, oh, that's gone. And, I've had times in recovery when I thought, I'm so depressed, because I have. Sometimes I'll fall into these massive holes of depression. And I think, I can't pull myself out of this. I need to go and get antidepressants, or I need help. But what I do instead is, okay, what have I not been doing, Okay, have I been ringing people? Have I been doing step work? How many meetings am I going to? Have I been reaching out to newcomers? Have I been praying? And if I look at all of those things and think, well, actually, no, I haven't really been putting as much effort in as I can, I think, well, what I'm going to do first is I'm going to do all those things. If I still feel depressed, then I can come back to it and maybe reassess the situation. So what happens is I do all the things that I know I need to do, which are the things that I've been shown in this program. And then all of a sudden I've forgotten I was depressed, I understand, again, I could be quite controversial, I understand that, there are some things that need medication. For me, I really don't ever want to go down that road because I know the risks. I've seen people with back pain that take painkillers and end up relapsing. I've seen it so many times, you know, and I have to really, you know, the thing that I have to do is I have to learn from experience. You know, I have to look around and I have to remember things, you know, remember my experiences, because it's when I remember the pain that I've put myself in that stops me behaving in the way that I behaved at that point to put myself in that pain again. I have to change. They say the road gets narrower, and it does, you know. I can't be behaving like I was when I was a year clean. You know, I can't do that stuff today, you know, because, you know, they say that if you make the same mistake twice, it's not a mistake, it's a choice the second time, you know, and it's true. Not that it's easy, because it really isn't easy, you know, I still do really mental stuff, as I said before, you know, and I'm a complete love addict as well, you know, I've got all these things that, you know, I'm a fantasy addict, you know, I can, my head even now can just go off in some crazy direction, you know. And I have to rein that stuff in as best I can today, because it's not appropriate a lot of the time. You know, with clean time comes responsibility, you know, but I'm an addict, and I am my default setting is to be completely and utterly irresponsible, you know. That is my default setting, and it's hard work being good. But you know what, it's worth it. And that to me is, you know, when I'm doing the right thing, when I'm doing God's will, the right thing happens, you know. And I want to talk, you know, a little bit about what's happened to me this week, because, you know, I'm one of these people that I work really hard. I probably overwork. I do a lot of things in my life. But I always feel that I don't really ever think I'm getting anywhere. You know, I feel like I'm constantly, you know, like the swans sort of elegantly kind of, you know, glides across the water, but underneath is just kind of like kicking away madly. And I feel that that's what my life is like, you know, a lot of the time. You know, I feel like I'm desperately trying to pay my bills, to look after my children, to manage all the responsibilities that I have in my life. And the more time I'm around, the more responsibility I seem to have. You know, sometimes I think it would be so nice to just go back to treatment just for a couple of months, do you know what I mean? And just have no responsibility whatsoever, and all I can do is focus on my recovery, but that's not going to happen. So, you know, I struggle with stuff, you know, and I kind of, you know, I know my friends would say to me that, you know, actually I'm a success, but I guess the life, you know, I don't know whether, I'm sure other people feel the same, you know, because it's my life and I'm living it, I can understand the challenges that I face. So for me, it feels like it's not a success, because I feel like I have so many challenges and so many hurdles to overcome on a daily basis. In the work that I do, you know, I kind of come into contact with somebody who's quite, I guess, is famous in their own way, and I've had dealings with this person, and at one point I actually owed them money for some stock that I had in my shop. And, you know, through this program I learned about integrity, you know, and I always kept in touch with him, I always told him what was going on, and I paid him back the money that I owed him as and when I said I would. And he has always loved my energy, and I believe that that's because I have this energy that comes from what we learn here, you know, the positivity, you know, that even when things are absolutely horrific, there's always a good thing. You know, I'm able to turn things around today. I'm able to see that no matter how bad it is, there's always a positive in what's going on. And I think people see that in us, you know. I really do. I think people see that in us. We have something about us because of this spiritual program that makes us attractive to other people. And he kept saying, oh, I want you to work for me, I want you to work for me. And I kind of was still trying to do my own thing. Well, anyway, it's kind of transpired. And yesterday, he's basically handed this opportunity to me. And I am, you know, now going to be doing something massive for this guy. But I've walked away from this meeting absolutely petrified. The anxiety, you know, and I'm kind of not that, I'm the sort of person that can take most things in my stride, I would say. And I'm thinking, why am I so scared? And I kind of processed it. I picked the phone up again, because that's the best tool that we have in this program, pick the phone up. And I realised that I'm actually terrified of being a success. I'm absolutely petrified of maybe not having money worries anymore, of, yeah, just of being a success. Because I guess deep down inside me, those messages of you're fat, you're ugly, you're evil, you're wicked, you're lazy, they're still there. You know, they're still there. So I'm terrified of success. But the other thing that I've learned in this program is that I don't need to look at what's going to happen in a year's time or 6 months' time. All I need to worry about is, what am I going to do today? How can I deal with this today? You know, so again, I've brought it right back to today, and I'm processing. I just need to write a list of what I need to do to get started, you know. And that's another amazing tool that we have in this program, just for today. I mean, how incredible is that? I don't need to worry about tomorrow. I don't need to worry about yesterday. It's irrelevant. You know, if I deal with today, following the 12-step program and all the skills and the tools that I've learned, tomorrow's going to be absolutely fine, you know? And the other thing I feel that I've kind of always tried to do in my life, no matter whether I've done, you know, cleaning jobs, I've done all sorts of things in recovery. Doesn't matter what I'm doing, I do it to the best of my ability, you know? I take pride in what I do, because if I do that, I have self-worth. And I need self-worth, because if I'm going to stay clean, I have to feel good about myself. So all these things kind of contribute to, I guess, making me the person that I am today and that I want to be, you know. And I'm, you know, as I say, I do things that don't give me self-worth as well, you know, quite regularly. But you know, I'm striving towards doing the right thing, you know. And that to me is what recovery is about. It's about continuously trying to better myself in whatever way I can. And that for me involves going to meetings and sharing my vulnerability on a regular basis as well. You know, there's no point in going to my home group and saying, yeah, everything's great, everything's wonderful, you know, it's fantastic, my life's amazing. It is, but actually I need to get real. And also, I don't want to hear, you know, I don't like listening to people doing, personally, talking program talk. It bores me, you know. We know what the program is. I want to hear what you're struggling with, how you're getting through it, and how you've overcome it. I want to hear about people, you know. That's when I connect. That's what gets me well. It's when I actually feel somebody else's pain and I can connect with them on a deep level. And I need to go to meetings and share. And I always share. It's very, very rare that I wouldn't share in a meeting. I could probably count on two hands the meetings I haven't shared at in the last 22 years. Because it's really important. And actually, I probably really annoy everybody because I usually come in and share first. Because in the early days, I was so scared of sharing that I remember I used to sit at Brixton meeting and I'd sit at the front and I was petrified of sharing. So I would always come in first because I'd just get it out of the way and it was done. And it's almost like I can't help myself. That's just what I do now. And that was a really good habit that I built up for myself in the early days. And it's, you know, it served me well. So yeah, I've got to talk a little bit about running. I have to, because it's such a big part of my life. you know, I always used to share in meetings and say, you know, I'm addicted to everything. You know, I did that in treatment. I don't know if any of you guys did it. They like a tick list of all the things you're addicted to. And I remember filling it in. I was like, I've got problems with every single area. You know, there wasn't any areas. And some people were just like food or drugs. And I was thinking, they must be lying over that. I'm really unwell. I worked out I was really unwell. But anyway. the only one I didn't tick was exercise. And I really wished I could tick that one, you know, because actually that was the thing I really wished I could be addicted to, because, you know, well, I guess it's obvious, isn't it, really? So how did I start running? I talk about running because I think it's really important, because it's like, in a way, my running journey has been similar to my recovery journey, you know, and I hope I do share about this. So if you've heard me share about my, you know, how I relate the running to my recovery, then I'm really sorry, but you're going to hear it again. You know, I entered the London Marathon for a laugh, just because I used to watch people on the telly, and I used to sit there on my sofa on a Sunday, you know, watching and thinking, how on earth can you run that far? You know, I couldn't even run a mile. How did you do that? And I'd started doing a little bit of running, you know. I think I did a 10K for Race for Life thing, and I nearly died at the end of it, and I was trying not to vomit for about 4 hours afterwards. But I thought, yeah, I'm going to do that again. But anyway, so I tried, I entered, and I didn't get in first of all. And then somebody said to me, there's a drug charity that you know, they only have about five places, you know, why don't you try them? So I contacted them, and hadn't been running at all, and in, I think it was halfway through January, I got an email saying, you know, there's a place come available, would you like to do it? I hadn't run for about 6 months, so I was really unfit, and obviously the marathon's in April. So I was like, I'll do it. But I didn't know how I was going to do it, and I started running. And it was great at first, because I'd kind of like go out, and every Sunday I'd kind of do a bit further, and it would be like this massive challenge, and I'd be like, wow, I've just run 14 kilometres, you know. And anyway, I'm going to try and keep the story short. But I ended up doing the marathon, and I completed it in 5 hours, 18 minutes, which I was very proud of at the time. And as soon as I finished doing it, I was like, I need to do that again. That was really painful. It really hurt, but it was great. I think it was just the kind of feeling of crossing that finish line and thinking, I've actually done this. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I've completed this. This is a miracle, you know. And my dad turned around to me and he said, you are the least likely person I would ever imagine would run a marathon. So I was like, okay, doing it again, Dad. You want to watch those knees? I said, yeah, but my knees will get worse and I'll get fat if I sit on the sofa and eat cake. So I'm going to go and run another marathon. And he keeps saying that to me now, quite a few later. But anyway, so the next time I thought, well, I'm going to go and join the running club and I'm going to train and I'm going to learn. You know, and this is where the recovery stuff comes in, because I set a training plan into my phone. And I followed this training plan. I'd get up at 5 a.m. before I took the kids to school, and I would get on my running machine if it was snowing or it was too cold, because I didn't like the cold. And I would do my training plan, you know. And I set in my training plan a sub-4 marathon, which means to do it in under 4 hours, because I wanted to do it in 4.5 hours. So I didn't, you know, but I'm an addict, so I wasn't going to put in a sub-4.5 hour one. I put in a sub-4 one. And I didn't really understand what sub-4 meant. It's actually quite, you know, to run a sub-4 marathon is kind of quite an achievement. So, but there was no way it was going to happen. But anyway, so I've done this training plan and I've gone and run the marathon, and I've done it in under 4 hours. I've done it in 3 hours, 54 minutes. And I've nearly died when I come through the finish. And it was only after I'd done it, because I was in a running club at this point, so we were all congregated sort of at the end of the mall, and everyone's coming back in like 5 hours this, and you know, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, I did all right, really. And I kind of, it was only after I'd done it that I realised that actually my naivety prior to that, because I didn't really understand that that was quite an achievement, but I just followed this plan, you know. And it's a bit like coming into recovery. Now, when we come here, we haven't got a clue how this stuff works, you know. I didn't think that sitting in a meeting or talking about my feelings or, you know, sharing it with, picking the phone up, having a sponsor, I didn't understand how that was going to work, because when I came here, I didn't have any faith, you know. And, you know, I knew I was powerless, so I knew step one, I got that, you know, I really got that. But, you know, step two is kind of, for me, it's about blind faith, really. And that, to me, is my training plan, you know. So I followed my training plan, not knowing or not understanding what was actually going to happen. And then I achieved it, you know, and I found that thing that I needed. So for me, it's like, you know, I got the faith that actually, if I follow this, it's going to work. Because it is that simple. If you follow a training plan, you know, you're going to do what it says on the tin, basically. And it's the same for here, you know. It is the same for here. You know, if I follow the suggestions, if I do what people say is going to work, no matter whether I believe it's going to work or not, if I follow the suggestions, it's going to work. And it does. I don't know how, but it does, you know. So anybody that's here that's new, who really doesn't understand what is going on, because I really didn't understand what was going on in the beginning. I didn't understand all the lingo, you know. It's a strange language we use in here. I forgot that it was a strange language because I'm so used to it now. But in the beginning, it's like, what are they talking about? You know, this is a program. It's not just meetings. It's not somewhere that I just come and I sit and I share and I listen. There's so many elements to this. I would say probably one of the most important elements to this program is actually doing service, because without service, I don't feel like I belong. I have to be part of something. And I, you know, I had a couple of years when I didn't do meetings. I sort of stepped out of NA for a while. I did my first 10 years in London, and then I moved out to Hertfordshire, where I am now, and I had a baby, and I had another, you know, I had a young boy. And, you know, it is challenging. Anybody that can, you know, come to meetings with young children, you know, if you see young children in a meeting, please just be kind to that mother or that father, because it's so difficult. You know, when you have a child in a meeting, you know, I used to be distracted. I couldn't focus. I couldn't concentrate, you know. And, you know, there's so few women in this fellowship. You know, we need women. We need strong women who can sponsor people and help people. You know, it's so important. So yeah, going back to, you know, I had this little bit of time away from meetings, and so I've completely lost my thread now. I don't know what I was going to talk about there, but anyway, so how frustrating. Okay, where was I going?
What
was
I saying? Meetings.
Oh no, it's before that. Service. Thank you. Yes. So that was it. So I didn't have a service commitment, and then I went back to meetings, and I was kind of dipping my foot in a bit. You know, I was in an area where there wasn't much clean time. I probably had the most clean time in the room, but I felt the least connected in that room. You know, I'd forgotten in 2.5 years. I had lost the skill of communicating from my heart. I could talk from my head, but you know, it's funny. It's really subtle how this illness can kind of creep in and take over again. Because I didn't want to use in that time I was away, but what we get here, you know, what I've got in these rooms is, it's the ability to connect my head and my heart, you know, mainly, more than anything. And to, you know, I can come and share. I don't need to think about what I'm sharing. It will just come out, you know, just spews out, you know, whether you want to hear it or not. It just spews out, you know. But when I went back to meetings, I couldn't share. I couldn't talk. It was almost like I'd lost my voice, you know, and I realised that was because I'd stopped the practice of sharing, you know, and I'd lost that ability. And I was really frightened, and I wasn't connecting with the meeting because I, you know, all this stuff. And I thought, I've just got to throw myself back in and get a commitment again. I've got to do this. And I put my hand up and I got myself a commitment. And as soon as I got that commitment, everything changed. I was part of again, you know? And it was really, I really felt the difference, you know. It was a massive, massive change. And all of a sudden, that's it. I was back in NA, and I knew that I was never, ever, ever going to go and leave this program again. You know, I knew that. You know, I never was going to take that risk again. And I've come back in, and I've thrown myself back in. You know, I've started meetings, and I've done, you know, I do always have service commitments. Really, really important. So I can't recommend it enough. And it's taught me so much as well. My service commitments have taught me how to deal with people in so many different ways. And I can use that stuff in my life, you know, in my work life, in, you know, my family life. You know, it's just invaluable. 3 minutes. Anyway, going back to my running. Sorry. But, you know, the running has been a massive part of my life. And actually, you know, at some points my running has jeopardised another part of my recovery, about my food recovery, because I'm in food recovery now. And, you know, and I've learned that, you know, I've learned to look at how can I find solutions to this stuff, you know. And I found different solutions to, you know, at one point I was trying to, you know, qualify for the Boston Marathon, and I needed to do it in under 3 hours 45. And I like relapsed on my food at mile 17 because I hit a wall and I needed some food inside me, because most marathon runners, you're eating sugar, you're eating carbs. I don't eat any sugar or carbs either. So I'm running marathons and ultra marathons with no carbohydrates, no sugar. And so I had to look at, I need to do something that's not jeopardising my recovery. So I've changed my focus. So I'm still running, but now my goal is to do 100 marathons and join the 100 Marathon Club and to do the marathon majors, which might sound really insane. I've got about 16 marathons this year. I've done two already. I've got an ultra marathon next Saturday as well. And but you know what? I love it. But I'm not worrying about going fast anymore. I'm just going out and I'm enjoying the countryside and I'm taking it in. And I see places and I see God when I'm out there running. You know, it's just stunning. I wouldn't even walk anywhere before. You know, and the other thing I love about running is that I connect. It's like, just like we have here, we have like a kind of connection. It's like there's this connection with running people. And you know, when you're doing something like, you know, 100 kilometres, you end up finding your little group, you know, and you end up complete, you know, you might start at different points, but you end up kind of clinging to these people and you pull each other through, you know, and that's what we do here. And those people that have helped pull me through, they're now going to be lifelong friends, just like the people I meet in these rooms, you know. And so, you know, my running, people might think I'm insane, but you know what? It's okay. There's times when I can recognise that I'm doing it addictively, but most of the time I'm okay with it, you know. And that's all right. It's as long as I'm okay with it, you know. If it gets to the point where I think it's dangerous, then maybe I'll change it. But right now it's fine. Oh, I've got 50 seconds. I've done really well, haven't I? So yeah, I guess my, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for this program. It's given me the most amazing life, you know, difficult and challenging, but amazing. And you know, I love all of you guys. You know, you're my family. And it's like, even when I ran in here, it's like, you know, my sponsor happens to be sitting in front of me, and it was like, you know, that was a lovely surprise, you know. But there's people here that I really love. You know, I never had real friendships before. I never had that kind of intimacy that I can have with people in recovery, you know, and that's such a massive gift. I need that intimacy to live, you know. What I want to end on is that, you know, before I came here, I just wanted to die. And you know what? I just want to live. And that's partly why I look after my body today in so many ways, with the food and the exercise, because I want to live till I'm 100. I want to live till I'm, you know, I can pick up a crack pipe when I'm 95 if I choose to. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, I just... but I want to live today. You know, I want to live. And that in itself is a miracle. And thank you guys for... You know, I hope you've got something out of my share. Thanks.